our system is in too many ways broken.
The way we see the world shapes the way that we treat it.
This is Making Contact.
I'm Salima Hamarani, and on today's Making Contact,
I am now working in agriculture with our Arab, Spanish, Indian, and Filipino brethren.
We hear from our friends at the podcast Kerning Cultures about a Yemeni immigrant who joined the United Farm Workers in the 1970s.
Working in the grape fields is tougher than coal mining because the work is for longer hours and the workers are exposed to maltreatment by the greedy capitalist landowners.
His name was Naji Daifala, and he became one of the early martyrs of the movement.
It was a very solemn tribute to Naji. That entire march, not a word was spoken, not one word. People were not talking to each other, they weren't whispering. All you could hear was the shuffle of the feet on the pavement.
But his death ignited the UFW, and he became a hero to generations of Arab organizers.
Here's producer Suzanne Jabed with the story.
Many of us may not have heard Naji's name before, but we should have. His story is eerily familiar to the police deaths that we heard so much about in the news in 2020, and years of anti-Muslim and anti-Arab rhetoric under the Trump administration. But Naji wasn't around for any of that. He was born in the village of Qahlan in North Yemen, but when he was 10, his parents sent him to what was then British-controlled South Yemen for a better education.
Based on letters left behind by Naji and his father, we know that Naji was very politically involved in Yemen as a young man prior to migrating to the U.S.
This is Naima Al-Amri. She's doing postdoctoral research at Princeton University and working on her first book, Long Live the Arab Worker, A Transnational History of Labor and Empire in the Yemeni Diaspora.
Like other Yemenis, Naji was inspired by political shifts happening in Yemen, as well as the rise of Arab nationalism in the Arab world at the time. So for example, while attending in school in Aden, Naji was arrested after he pulled down both a British flag and a North Yemen flag that was hanging on the campus.
After he finished high school, he moved to Taiz and interned with an anti-imperialist publication there. But his dream was to study medicine in the U.S. So on August 5th, 1967, when he was just under 20 years old, he moved to America in hopes of continuing his education. While he was in America, he got in the habit of writing letters to his father.
Dearest father, I arrived in America to continue my studies as I had dreamed. But because living conditions are hard, and because studying in America is very difficult, I feel rather that I owe you some financial assistance.
So the mid-1960s to early 1970s, the time that Naji came and worked in the U.S., marks a significant period of Yemeni labor migration to the U.S.
There were many reasons for the flow of Yemeni migration to the U.S. around this time.
This bill that we will sign today is not a revolutionary bill.
One was the 1965 Immigration Act, which abolished the racist national quota system, allowing for more migration from all over the world.
It does repair a very deep and painful flaw in the fabric of American justice. It corrects a cruel and enduring wrong in the conduct of the American nation.
Like other Arab immigrants at the time, many Yemenis coming to the U.S. started working in auto factories in Detroit, Michigan, or steel plants in Buffalo, New York.
And, of course, agricultural farms in California. But also political changes that were happening in Yemen at the time also increased labor migration. So in 1967...
In Aden, the British announced that after 148 years, they were pulling out...
South Yemen successfully led a decolonization movement that ended over 100 years of British colonial presence in the region, and they became the People's Democratic Republic of Yemen.
And while back home in Yemen, politics were shifting towards more independence and justice, on California's agricultural fields, Naji saw some parallels. I want to pause here to give you some context.
There's hardly an area in the world that compares to it. And no one knows this better than those of us who live here.
You see, California, where Nagy was working, was and still is America's food basket. Over a third of the country's vegetables and two-thirds of the country's fruits and nuts are grown in the state. And in the 1960s and 70s, the working conditions were bad.
We have problems dealing with wages because we don't get paid enough.
Many of the workers were paid around $2 a day and had to work long, grueling hours in the heat, breathing in the pesticides that were sprayed on crops.
We have the labor camps, which are miserable shacks. We get killed sometimes on the road. People read about it, but nothing happens. These are the evils that the United Farm Workers have been fighting against, and nobody else.
And this billion-dollar industry depends on farm workers, the people in the fields working for long hours, picking the produce that gets sold in supermarkets and that ends up on our plates. It's around this time a figure by the name of Cesar Chavez emerged as a leader of farm workers in California.
No, we'll be boycotting everywhere. Grapes and lettuce. We'll be asking the public, first of all, not to eat lettuce, not to eat grapes, not to buy grapes, boycotting supermarkets.
Chavez and the United Farm Workers, which he led, decided enough is enough and voted to go on strike again. So farm workers went back on strike, and here's where Nagy comes in.
I am now working in agriculture with our Arab, Spanish, Indian, and Filipino brethren. Working in the grape fields is tougher than coal mining because the work is for longer hours, and the workers are exposed to maltreatment by the greedy capitalist landowners. And agricultural workers here have no collective representation to protect them and to undertake demands for their rights and sufficient assurances for them, like those for the workers in factories and other sectors.
Nagy joined thousands of Yemeni agricultural workers in the Central Valley of California. And while exact numbers are conflicting, we know that roughly 100,000 Yemeni workers came to California in the 60s and 70s. And by the time Nagy arrived in California, the United Farm Workers, which was the largest farm worker organization in the Central Valley, already included hundreds of Yemeni workers. But Yemeni workers coming into California were coming into a long system of exploitation.
If you look at the history of California farm labor, you'll see that California agriculture was built upon the backs of succeeding waves of mostly dark-skinned immigrants imported to work in the fields.
This is Mark Grossman.
And I was Cesar Chavez's longtime press secretary, speechwriter, personal aide. I knew him the last 24 years of his life.
Dearest father, you will be amazed at this which I am writing to you in this letter about the prisons for workers in America. When I tell you how much an agricultural worker suffers in terms of severe ill will from the landlords of the ranches. These workers live in an encampment that resembles military barracks, surrounded by barbed wire and a massive barrier of governmental agents who forbid anyone from contacting the workers or even conversing with their friends. Indeed, landowners and government officials look upon farm workers with contempt and hatred, despite the fact that the American economy is based on the efforts and strong arms of farm workers. For here, the workers are the pillars, the spinal column of the American economy. Reports state that agricultural production and the staggering profits of the landowners increase every year by 35%.
For years, Filipino and later Mexican workers had organized against the low pay and harsh conditions of working in fields of large California growers.
If the strikers could win union recognition in their struggle with the table grape owners, the lives of farm workers throughout America could be transformed.
In 1965, workers from the two largest farm worker groups at the time came together to organize a strike against the biggest growers in California's Central Valley.
The pickets keep up their efforts to stop the harvesting throughout the terrible heat of the day.
Together, they formed the United Farm Workers and created massive campaigns of nonviolent action, including marches, strikes, pickets, and hunger strikes, and a national boycott of table grapes and lettuce, two of the main products of growers in the area.
Mr. Barzo, You gonna sell out of grapes? You got a grape problem? Can we help you solve the problem, Mike? You signed a contract and we solved the problem. Mr. Bozo.
The campaign got a lot of attention, and in 1970, workers under the banner of the United Farm Workers signed historic contracts with large employers in California that raised wages, introduced health plans for workers, and brought in new safety measures in the fields. Employers assumed that these Yemeni workers, who were new to the country, would be more compliant and less likely to stir trouble for them. But they were wrong.
I mean, so contrary to the portrayal of Naji and other Yemenis, for that matter, as sort of passive or apolitical, sources that I've found in my research indicate that that's far from the case. It's clear that when Naji arrives in the U.S. And becomes involved as an organizer with the UFW, that he was already bringing with him a set of political experiences from Yemen that made him far from passive or apolitical.
Just 3 years after the United Farm Workers had negotiated those historic contracts with their employers, right before they were set to expire, the head of another union, the Teamsters, came to the growers with a proposal that they work together against the United Farm Workers. Here's Mark Grossman again.
Instead of renegotiating those contracts with the United Farm Workers, most of those growers sign what we call sweetheart contracts with another union, the Teamsters Union, that they brought in to try to keep the UFW out of the fields.
So this was the context in the farm worker industry when Naji arrived in California in the early 1970s. And then, in the summer of 1973, all of these tensions that had been bubbling away for years came to a head.
The summer of 1973 was one of the roughest we've had.
This is from the 1975 documentary, Fighting for Our Lives, about the difficult and bloody struggle the United Farm Workers faced during the 1973 strike.
Two of our strikers were killed. Dozens of our people were beaten. Thousands of them were arrested and thrown in jail. And all because we dared to stand up to the growers when they made one more desperate attempt to crush our union.
In what up to then had been the biggest farm labor strike in state history. At one time, there were, maybe 10,000 farm workers out on strike. ...3,500 strikers were arrested for engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience, disobeying court injunctions that prohibited them from assembling and striking and picketing.
The first court order restricting our picketing was issued on April 16th, which was the very first day of the strike. As soon as that happened, the sheriff's deputies were all over the valley and tried to prevent us from doing anything.
The jails were filled from the very southern end of the San Joaquin Valley up to north of Fresno. Hundreds of strikers were brutally beaten.
That summer was filled with contentious standoffs between United Farm Workers, police, growers, and the Teamsters Union. And while Naji had already been working with the United Farm Workers and had been hired as an organizer at this point, it was during this tense summer that he took on a greater role as a picket captain. Here's Ray Cordova again.
And it's the duty of the picket captain to make certain that all the gates are covered, and you have to make certain that your strikers, they're all fed, etc. You know, you're kind of like a father figure to them, but you have authority as well, too.
Dearest father, I'm writing you this letter to you from Delano, California. You will note the enclosure of a check for $1,000. I am now working harvesting grapes, and I have organized for representation for the workers. I and my Arab brethren, under the leadership of the Spanish leader Cesar Chavez. He is leading the workers' revolution with his free companions, members of the union, who continue their activities bravely and boldly, day and night, for the revolution shall continue until victory.
Yeah, I mean, as an organizer, he was a translator, so he was a very key individual in the farmworker movement.
This is Na'mal Omri again.
And in addition to being a leader of the Yemeni workers at the company where he worked, he also became indispensable in terms of helping the various ethnicities communicate with each other during the strike.
He was that bridge for the Yemeni community to the Mexican-American community, the Filipino community. And so to do that, you have to have that strong presence, right, to be an organizer.
You know, it was a very stressful, intense time in the Southern Central Valley then. And Naji became extremely valuable in coordinating the Arab workers' activism, involvement, participation in the strike. So that's kind of where things laid in August of 1973.
You're listening to Making Contact, and this is Viva Brother Naji, a piece from our friends at the podcast Kerning Cultures about a Yemeni immigrant who fought beside the United Farm Workers. If you'd like to find out more information about today's show, visit us online at radioproject.org. And now, back to the show.
At around 1:15 in the morning, on August 15th, Naji and a group of 15 other farm workers were hanging out outside a local restaurant in Lamont, California. That's when a car from the Kern County Sheriff's Department pulled up. Shortly afterwards, Naji was killed. According to witnesses and United Farm Workers spokespeople, officers got out of the car.
Kern County Sheriff's deputy, his name was Gilbert Cooper, big, husky, 200-pound deputy.
And started harassing the group. Tensions began to rise, and eventually, police arrested one of the men.
Accosted a group of strikers on a public street in Lamont, perfectly peaceful.
The group was outraged and argued with the officers outside the cafe.
Things got pretty heated.
According to the United Farm Workers, that's when one officer zoned in on Naji.
Naji took off from the group, and Deputy Cooper ran after him. Cooper struck Naji on the back of his head with a big metal flashlight. He was knocked to the ground. Then the deputy dragged him by his feet with his head hitting the pavement quite a distance. There was a line of blood that marked the path.
He was taken to the hospital, and thousands of people showed up to support him while Naji fought for his life. But it wasn't long before he succumbed to his injuries. Little information was released by police about the death. In this scene, also from the Fighting for Our Lives documentary, General Counsel for the UFW, Jerry Cohen, interviews another worker about what happened the night of Naji's death.
And then two officers dragged him on the ground and left him. All summer long, the police have used excessive force. They've beaten women over the heads, and then they've lied to the press and said that the women have attacked them. They've beaten young children over the heads, and they said that the young children have attacked them. And now you've killed one of our Arab brothers. And it was inevitable because the police here are racist. And if you have someone...
The UFW was unable to reach Naji's family in Yemen initially. And so they asked his co-workers, what was the best thing to do? Should he be buried in California and then later maybe return to Yemen? The Yemeni workers said that it would be the first time that a Yemeni worker who had died outside the country would be shipped home, and that would be considered an honor. So the UFW finally was able to make arrangements with the family to ship his body back to Yemen.
Ray Cordova was one of the thousands of marchers at Naji's funeral. They carried his casket from the California town of La Paz to the nearest airport in Bakersfield.
There were over 7,000 strikers, all farm workers, union members.
In the video of this march, you see aerial shots from a helicopter, and the road is full of people snaking back for miles and miles.
And what we did, about every 100 feet or every 100 yards, the eight of the people carrying the casket, they would peel off, and then those up at the front of the march, they'd go and grab the casket and carry it more. So as we got closer to the airport, a lot of people had their hands on the casket.
It was a very solemn tribute to Nagy. That entire march, not a word was spoken, not one word. People were not talking to each other, they weren't whispering. All you could hear was the shuffle of the feet on the pavement.
This is from a speech Cesar Chavez gave at Neji's funeral.
Neji Dayfala is dead at the age of 24. The hand that struck Brother Neji down trembles in fear. It too is the victim of the climate, of the violence, racism, and hatred created by those men who own everything and kill what they cannot own. In the struggle to change these evils, Neji gave his life.
After Neji's casket was sent back home to Yemen, there was little justice for his brutal killing.
The sheriff's deputy who killed Nagy was never charged with a crime.
The United Farm Workers eventually tracked down Nagy's family and helped with their travel to the U.S. for his funeral, as well as the return of his body back to Yemen.
The UFW finally located Muhsin Dayfala, Nagy's father, in Yemen. Cesar arranged for him to come out to the United States on several occasions to take part in union ceremonies honoring his son. Although Nagy never worked under a union contract and never qualified for a union pension, the UFW sent a remittance, a payment, to Mr. Dayfala every month, and it continued until Mr. Dayfala passed away.
On a number of occasions, Neji's father and Cesar Chavez also exchanged letters, usually around the time of the anniversary of Neji's death.
Dear Brother Dayfala, on behalf of all of us and the United Farm Workers of America, I send greetings and best wishes on this, the 7th anniversary of Neji's death. As all of us in the Farm Workers Movement honor Neji and the other martyrs who have given their life's blood for the cause of justice for farm workers, we take this opportunity to tell you of our gratitude for Neji's life and sacrifice, and of our continuing sorrow at the loss you and your family suffered. So long as farm workers struggle to be free, Neji's memory will burn bright in their hearts. With warmest personal regards, viva la causa.
Neji's death had a big impact on the United Farm Worker Movement and within the Yemeni community, both in the U.S. and back in Yemen.
In the farm labor camps where they were living, some who had not already joined the strike did so. In fact, there was a whole camp of Arab workers at Roberts Farms that joined the strike at that point. There was a vigil at the hospital. Hundreds of strikers gathered there the following night.
Days later, another United Farm Workers member was killed on the picket line. Juan de la Cruz was fired on during a protest by a worker subverting the picket line, driving past in a pickup truck.
But Naji's death was not in vain.
The deaths of Nagy and Juan didn't stop us. As the harvest came to an end and the growers prepared to ship their grapes to the market, we gathered by the hundreds in Delano, Lamont, Fresno, and the other agricultural towns in order to resume the boycott.
And then hundreds of grape strikers and their families were assigned and went off to cities across the U.S. and then into Canada and eventually into Western Europe to organize a second grape boycott.
We'll be boycotting everywhere. Grapes and lettuce, will be asking the public, first of all, not to eat lettuce. Literally let them know that there is literally blood on those grapes.
At countless churches and synagogues and mosques and union halls and on college campuses, they told the story of the 1973 grape strike, especially the deaths of Nagy Dayfala and Juan de la Cruz.
We would go to every major city in the United States and Canada, over 60 of them in all, and take our cause to the people.
The boycott took off. There was a national poll in 1975, 2 years later, that showed 17 million American adults were boycotting grapes in support of the UFW.
Eventually, 2 years after farm workers had begun picketing, after countless arrests, and after two farm workers were killed, California passed the Agricultural Labor Relations Act of 1975.
This is the first law in the country that granted farm workers the right to peaceably assemble, to vote in secret ballot state-conducted elections to bring the union in, and then to bargain with their employers as equals across the bargaining table so they wouldn't just have to take orders all their lives. That year in 1975, among the workers voting in the first elections were Yemeni workers at big farms in the Central Valley, and their activism was dedicated in the name of Naji Defala. So Naji's sacrifice really did produce genuine progress for farm workers that continues to this day, because farm workers still use that law to organize, bring the union in, and materially improve their wages, hours, working conditions, and win a whole array of other benefits, many of which were unimaginable back in 1973.
But for many Yemeni Americans, Naji's death also became a symbol of the fight for Arab recognition in America. This is Na'ma El Omri again.
I mean, I think first and foremost, Naji's death was shocking to Yemenis, both here in the US and in Yemen. And so this sort of myth of the American dream, or this idea that America was full of endless opportunities, like, that was challenged after Naji's death. But alongside that, I think Naji's death also politicized Yemenis in the US and elsewhere in the diaspora.
Na'ma told us that what she finds remarkable is the impact Naji's story had on Arab organizers who had never known or met him. In fact, she says his death helped to ignite protests and organizing efforts in Dearborn, Michigan, an area that is now well known for its organizing institutions, created by and for Arab Americans.
In Michigan, where there was a really large, prominent Yemeni American community in Dearborn and Detroit working in the auto industry. And so after hearing of Naji's death, Yemeni auto workers in Dearborn organized a rally to demand a proper investigation of his murder. And it was at this rally that folks started to have a dialogue around the challenges that Yemeni and other Arab auto workers were facing in the factories, challenges that were similar to what farm workers were facing in California.
And even up until today, young Yemenis and Yemeni Americans are inspired by Naji's story. When janitors in San Francisco were organizing for better contracts in 2012, they invoked the legacy of Naji.
So we always love to tell that story, especially when we're working with Yemeni youth, to let them know and understand that there have been people in their community that have worked, you know, decades ago, and that they are standing on the shoulders of giants. And that giant is Naji Defala.
That was Kearney Cultures and their piece, Viva Brother Naji, and that does it for today's show. If you'd like more information about the United Farm Workers and their current ongoing struggles, visit us online at radioproject.org. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is making_contact on Twitter, and on Instagram, we're Making Contact Radio Project. I'm Salima Hamarani. Thank you for listening to Making Contact.